Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, amateur vigilantes and DJ hopefuls. My name is Jared. I'm recovering from the plague, and with me is my hero, Ian.
That's me. To the rescue.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at our table. Today, we're at the featured table, where we'll be looking at two games, Origin Story and I Made You a Mixtape. First up is Origin Story, designed by Jamie Stegmeier and Pete Wissinger. Artwork created by Clementine Camparado. That can't be right. Clementine Campardo. I apologize. And published by Stonemaier Games.
Origin Story is a 1-5 player trick-taking in tableau-building game. Forge your own legend, heroic or villainous. In this game, you will craft in the rise of a champion or the birth of the ultimate villain. You will learn abilities, hone defining traits, and master powerful skills as you shape your destiny. One choice / trick at a time. Perfect your journey, build your myth, and create the greatest origin story ever told. That's Origin Story.
Great. Love that. I really thought you were going to go with a more like theater trailer guy, like for a movie. But that was the way you were going to go. But I liked what you did. It was good.
Origin Story, coming to theaters anytime now.
My goodness. Ian, how you doing, buddy?
I'm about to lose my voice from that.
Oh, good. Because I lost my...
All right.
Like real, guys. It's not real.
Yeah, he's drinking moonshine. Just wet the whistle.
I've tried everything. We've tried medicine. We've tried hot tea. We tried water. We've tried cough drops. We've tried all kinds of things. I even was like, I'm like guzzling echinacea, which if you don't know what that is, just look it up because it's super fun. Guys, I've tried prayer. I need to go see a priest because it's bad.
That's pretty good. I mean, hey, whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes, right?
Literally, whatever it takes.
Yeah. So, anyway.
All right. Ian, we always start with a question to make it really personal before we get started on talking about the game. This is really just a for you and me time. Everybody's like, come on, let's get on with it and let's get to the game. But I'm curious.
Oh, boy.
What's something heroic that you've done in your life?
No, Mike.
Make it good, because I called you my hero not 45 seconds ago.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've lived. I'm alive.
That's not heroic.
I feel like I'm a heroic person to myself.
What?
I've kept myself alive. No, I mean, I don't know. I don't think heroic is...
Come on. Don't be so modest.
It's a strong word. I mean, I am a nurse, so like I do save people occasionally, not very often. We just, you know, I do my job. But okay. No, I mean, there isn't one circumstance I did feel where I really... like save somebody's life and you know in a it's also sad in another way, so I don't know how heroic it was, but there was a guy we had in the hospital and I was kind of in and checking on him and I noticed something was kind of weird and I just had kind of caught this like look on his eye and his heart stopped beating in that moment and I caught it. I was like, okay, that's, you know, there's just something you see. So I had kind of the presentation of everything and I started turning blue and I was like, this is not gonna be good. So I started chest compressions, which save lives and are a heroic act to anybody that does them. I don't do them very much at all anymore, but in my current role, but that was the time that I did. And we did get them back and, yeah, and so that was a moment. I had the shaky hands after. It's my first time kind of experiencing that. You know, I'd been in emergency scenarios before, but you know, that doesn't happen. I know people think it happens like every day, like in the Gary Gay's Anatomy or something like that. Unless you're in the ICU or something like that, it doesn't happen super often. So it's always an intense situation, but I did feel, you know, I would say that was heroic in a way. What about you?
I don't know that I ever saved anybody's life physically. No. That'll leave that to you.
That's right. Mentally.
Emotionally, I mean, I save people all the time.
That's right. You save me every day. No. Insanity.
I do have two specific stories that came to mind when we were talking about this question. One, I don't know if he's listening, but my good buddy Derek Davis and I were sitting at a B-dubs. This was years ago. And he was telling me about, like, he and this girl had been dating for a while. And if you know Derek, Derek's a very cautious, everything's got to be just right kind of person. And so he and I are eating, and I'm like, ask him, like, hey, how are things going? And, you know, he's kind of like, yeah, things are good, like, just describing how great this relationship is and how excited he is to go to the next step. But he's, like, also acting like he can't go to the next step. And I'm like, I just flat out, I was like, I know it's none of my business, but I'm going to ask him. Like, I have to push this. And I'm like, Derek, why aren't you getting married? And he started coming up with some ideas. And I was like, no, Derek, like, seriously.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can tell me right now that is going to be reasonable. Like, you have a steady job. You have a house. You have all kinds of money in the bank. Your relationship's great. Like, we just kept rattling it off. And I was like, there's no reason you should not be getting married. And he thought about it for a second. And he's like, you're right. And we went to the jewelry store that night and got an engagement ring, and then he proposed. It was great.
Wow. Okay.
And years later, he still is like, I'm so thankful that you said that. Like,
you saved his life. That was heroic.
I saved a marriage that wasn't happening.
That's right. That's crazy. Now you are a hero.
So if you need a push, I'm here for you.
That's right.
The other one, this was very interesting. This was an interesting experience. So for those that don't know, I worked in Lyft's safety department, the rideshare company. I worked in their safety department for a long time. And the very first week that I was on the phones, this person calls in New York, and they're in this massive snowstorm. And it's this driver that's on the phone, and they're trying to get this passenger home, but it's this massive snowstorm. There's roads that are closed. So for the next 2 hours, I'm on Google Maps navigating them home. Like, we ran into, like, they tried to go one way and they ended up getting stuck because they couldn't get up the hill. So we, like, turned them around and navigated them a different way. And I was like, this is what it's like to be Overwatch, like, right here. So I got to do that. That was pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, so that's my heroic moment. That's legit. No, that's awesome. Man, the power. That was your origin story.
That's right. I was wielding it right there. The power of Google Maps was right there in front of me. So, but no, it was good. I could tell lots of stories from Lyft. I probably shouldn't, but, you know.
Yeah, probably not. But
in the right situation, we could talk.
Absolutely. About it,
but anyways, so yeah, so that's our little moment. So I guess let's talk about how to play this game.
Yeah. Why don't we do that?
Okay, well, we'll kind of give an overview at least and talk through it. I do apologize for my voice. Like I said, we're trying to recover from the plague, and it's just an impossible task, apparently. So we're just going to do our best. But Origin Story is a trick-taking and tableau-building game. It's going to be played over 5 rounds, and you can play 1 to 5 players. I have not played solo, so I'm not going to really touch on that, but I can give you a good idea of what it's like from 2 to 5. So basically, you are building out a hero's origin story. You're given characters who has a basic, like, their name, a board to hold the cards that you're going to build, and a basic ability that they have that's unique to them. You're going to be given a stamina token, which is the currency in the game, and then you're going to be given a little score tracker, which also is double-sided to show a superhero mask and a villain mask. During these 5 rounds, you're going to be basically doing 2 phases. You're going to be given new power-up cards, which you're going to pick from 3 each time. You're going to pick one to assign into your hero. You're going to use stamina to power certain cards depending on how you want to play. And then you're going to move into the second phase of the round, which is where you will actually do the trick-taking part of the game. If you've never played a trick-taking game before, there's a deck of cards with cards in 4 different suits. numbered from 1 to 13 in this game. When someone leads a particular card, that means playing it out in front of them. Everybody else at the table has to play the same suit if possible. If they're not able to, then they can play whatever they want. And sometimes there's certain power-ups that they can do to manipulate the cards in this particular game. Once everybody's played a card, if everybody played in suit, whoever played the highest suit would be declared the winner of that round, and they would take those cards, which is called a trick, and keep that in front of them to be scored later on. If someone played a card that did what is called a trump in this type of game, then they would take the deck instead. And in this case, trump is the yellow suit, which is love. And so there are four different suits. I believe it's speed, strength, intelligence, and love are your four types. And again, those are numbered 1 to 13. So again, in the first half, you're basically taking these cards that give your hero different abilities. You're powering up the abilities that you want to use that round. And then you're playing the trick-taking game. When the trick-taking game aspect starts, you're going to, before that, everyone is going to, under the table, decide if they're going to be a superhero or supervillain for that round. If you're a superhero, you're going to get 1 point per trick that you gain. If you're a supervillain, you don't want any tricks because that's going to get you 4 points. And so there's different ways to play, and you're kind of, that's where the bidding mechanic comes in, those trick-taking games. The game is played over 5 rounds, very much following this style. In round 3, there is an event that takes place that kind of shakes things up a little bit for that round. In a lot of ways, it acts as the catch-up mechanic, because usually there's one player that's kind of set as either the mastermind, or there might be something where the event will target one specific person to kind of let the rest of the group play it. It basically alters the game for that round. But then once you get through 5 rounds, you will do a few different things. One, you'll score up all your points. But before that, for the 5th round, instead of getting a new superhero gadget or whatever, you actually become your superhero, and you have a special power that you get to do for that last round, which usually gives you a decent amount of points if you are able to complete the power, which is cool. And then whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. So that is how you play Origin Story in a nutshell.
Your origin story.
No, Palpatine, this is not a Star Wars story.
Unlimited power.
Ridiculous.
We've talked about many trick-taking games on this podcast. And I do think what makes the trick-taking game that you're playing different is always like what we have to get to the nitty-gritty, especially when talking about the game, but also playing. What makes it fun? What makes it different than just a game of spades or hearts? You know, what are you doing differently? So these are important questions. And as part of design, you know, there's some things that you have to create in this environment of a game, especially in a trick-taking game, because they're fun, they're quick, but are they unique? And so, because a bigger board game, you could do that. You know, you have a lot more potential to create this kind of long experience that is very unique. But in a trick-taking game, like, it's a trick-taking game. So, like, how do you make it different? And so I think this breeds an opportunity here with this game of doing something very unique, in that you're kind of creating this superhero via a trick-taking game. There's also parts of it that are not. So you have multiple decks that you're not using, like you mentioned, that are specific to like events and abilities and stuff like that. But the main core principle of the game that you're actually end up playing is trick-taking. But it just changes the way you play the tricks each individual time. And so I think that's really cool that you create this, difference in each player's game. It's no longer just about, okay, do I have a bunch of high cards in my hand? Am I going to try and win some tricks? It's honestly not about that, because once you start building your hero or your villain, it very much guides you into what you're trying to do each round. And honestly, some rounds it might be really, really hard to achieve that, because it's like, oh, I only want to win one trick. Well, I have a bunch of high cards, so how do I get away with this? It really does put a little bit of a spin on the classic trick-taking style, because there's this whole other, it's basically just adding a bunch of goals to your character, your person.
I think that's close. I mean, I do think that the thing that makes this game, well, there's several things that makes this game unique for trick taking, but I will say that like the big draw is, wow, that's a cool idea to be able to create this origin story. Like we have a lot of games about the actual superheroes and big superheroes.
Right.
And fighting crime in a multitude of capacities. But the concept of like building the origin story is super fun.
We don't talk about that part. Yeah.
Even though it's like a huge part of a hero's journey. And so I was very drawn in by that. And I was curious to see how it would be done. So that for me was the draw of this is another trick taking game, but it's going to be different.
Yeah.
I think something else that, I mean, the fact that you are getting a different ability continues to modify the game for you. Like I'm thinking about Rebel Princess from Bezier, or even their new one that's coming out, Zombie Princess, has cards that flip out that modify the table where everyone's under a new rule set. But this rule set is just for you.
Where
my mental cards might be able to be modified by me, but they can't be modified by you.
Yeah.
I do think that's cool. I like the idea of that. And so that was something that really, I was like, okay, I can kind of get behind this a little bit.
That uniqueness that you can manipulate the table in your own way makes it a little different is that, you do feel like you're kind of separate from the rest of the game. And that's what the goal here is that you are your own hero developing and becoming, famous, I guess, or whatever. But you're right, that the ability to manipulate things on the table or manipulate opponents makes you do feel like you have real abilities. I think one of yours is that there was a card that you had that allowed you to kind of get a glance at what was in my hand. I forget what the Truth Serum. Truth Serum. So there's ways to do that. And there was, I forget the name of my cards, to be honest, that I've had, but I'm just trying to blank. But there's like telekinesis and stuff like that that do things, allow you to move things around. That was one that I had. And I was able to swap I could draw a card and swap one out with a card that was already in my hand. And so that was a way to kind of get rid of either low cards or high cards or whatever cards I didn't want and get rid of one, get a new one. And obviously it's random. You mentioned things that are different. Most trick-taking games, you deal out most of the cards or almost all of the cards. We talked about this, is that in this game, there's, what's the highest card? 15? Is it higher than that?
I think it's 13.
It's crazy. But there's so many cards, and you only deal eight or nine, depending.
Yeah, it's eight.
And so you don't see all the cards. And that's the unique thing. You have a stack of cards that's 15, depending on how many players you have, I guess, it changes. But, you're looking at multiple cards not being present. And so now that is a big twist. Most trick takings that I've played, you get rid of most of the cards, right? Maybe one or, everybody discards one or whatever. Like there's cards that aren't seen, but there's like a large majority here of the deck, especially in our games that we played, it's a stack of cards that you're not seeing. So you're like, there's so much variability on what the tricks will end up. You have no clue, which allows for more trump cards to be played or cards, that offsuit, which is really, I think it's a really good design play because you have all these abilities that really tie into like winning one trick, winning four, like it has a specific amount of tricks that you're supposed to win. So that's like kind of that, prediction aspect, like there's that, but also like you're trying to get these abilities and trigger all these abilities that you gain throughout the game. And so you need a design path as far as the game design for you to be able to, complete those goals. And I think they did a very well balanced design here in that you have a lot of cards, you have a lot of potential with your abilities, and you're putting those together. Because if you just had to play every single card, I do feel like you might, in other trick-taking games, like this, oftentimes you have to play your cards within suit because they're all out in the way it balances out. You can play them right. But I did feel like multiple times in this game, I had like no cards in a certain suit. It's just because I think there's a lot of cards. There's a lot more than, and so I think that's, I don't know, that just changes the way the whole abilities work, I think, as your hero.
Yep. So if there's 52 cards, and in a four-player game, you're going to see 32 of them on any given round. Like, you're going to have all 52 that get shuffled, but you're only going to deal out 32 of them. Now, there are, to be fair, there are a few cards that, like, you can discard and redraw.
Sure.
Like that. So, like, I get it. But I, like, it is different. I mean, I don't play a whole lot of games in the trick-taking world where you leave a significant amount of the stack behind each round. Because, I mean, I grew up on spades, and, you know, you're used to almost all the cards, if not all the cards, being in the deck. And part of the trick-taking game is figuring out where the cards are.
Like, yeah.
You know, that's part of it. So I
actually, and you can predict who has the cards. Like,
you at least I think, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
You can't do that in this.
No. And I will just kind of jump into it and say, I think this is a negative. I don't enjoy the randomness of there's just such a high odds of, like, so for example, I had a game where I could manipulate the blue cards, which I think are the mental ones. Okay. And I got that early and I thought, this is great. I'm going to love to have this card to be able to use multiple times throughout the game. I used it twice, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I never saw blue cards again. And like you said, I mean, most of the time, because like when you're, I mean, as a spades player, you want to be out of a suit as soon as possible because it gives you so much flexibility. And in this game, you're out of a suit by turn two most of the time, unless the cards just fall really crazy, because there's just so many of them that don't get played that it's not that hard to get out of a suit. And so, I don't know, for me, it felt like there was a lot of luck that came into how the cards fell. And it, and in some ways, not just for the trick-taking side, but also like whatever I pull out of the power-up deck, I've got to hope I also pull it out of the, I pull the right cards to go with it.
Yeah.
And so I love the concept of you're like figuring out these gadgets, and each, you know, each round is basically supposed to be a chapter of your life as you're figuring out how to use these new things. And one, like, you kind of lose that because you're frustrated at the luck aspect if you don't get it. But also, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't feel like once we were in it, I didn't feel like the hero thing kind of went away a little bit as far as like being in, like going through an origin story. Like, I could see how the gadgets are very much, and all the different things are very much like geared towards being a hero.
Yeah.
But the origin part of it really, I don't know. It's on the back burner.
Yeah. I mean, no, I think I agree with you. And a little bit there, I did feel like that part of it was kind of on the back burner. I did feel like I'm still playing my hero, though, like, because you're getting those cards and you see the art in front of you and you see the abilities. So you're like, you're triggering them. So you feel like you're doing those things. But yeah, creating this kind of story, you know, I guess because they have those event cards and they're like after like round three, like once, there's like one event.
And it's a thick stack for something that happens once.
Yeah, and it does feel like, you know, if it's truly this origin story, wouldn't you want more events? I think that's kind of would make it feel a little bit, and I guess you could like make your own rule on that, but I don't know, it would, you're right in that regard, is like, yeah, you want a little bit more here to create the story. The story is not much of a story, it's more of just collecting abilities and unlocking abilities, and you know, and then you can make a twist and a spin on it. Like, I think I'm learning these abilities. I'm getting better at these. And that's cool. Like, that's cool. I like that. But where's the story now? Like, you know, it does feel the story cards, the event cards are sparse. And so you're not getting those as frequently. So I think that's an important thing to note here, is that the story in all this is not as much as we would, you know, hope.
Yeah.
But.
And I think the luck, I think the luck factor is too high. Like, as someone who doesn't mind luck in games, I mean, I think the combination of finding the things, like I mentioned a second ago, to sync together, but also, man, we looked through the hero deck of, like, different heroes that you could get, and not only is it kind of dependent on you doing, like, you know what the hero is, the two hero options are, so you can be working towards those, but there were some heroes that I'm like, man, this is just way better. Like, it's just, it's going to score more. It's easier to do. And so I didn't feel, I'm not a math guy, so I'm not going to sit here and just claim a game is super unbalanced. But to me, it very much felt like some heroes were easily better than others.
Yeah, I think there was definitely one that was not better than any the others. There was one that did basically the same thing and they're just a lot better.
That was bad.
Yeah.
That was rough.
Yeah, because there's a guy that basically he can discard the stamina and just get points based off the stamina. Or there was another one that could do that same thing, but then like also do two other things. And it's like, well, this is the same ability, but this one just does way more.
It just gets more. Yeah,
it just gets more things. And so it's like, what happened here? I don't know, man. I've got a mixed feeling about this one. I think overall, if you want to try something new in a trick-taking game, I think it adds enough elements here. If you are okay with if you're okay with a lot of luck and uncertainty in the trick-taking aspect, maybe you don't love trick-taking because it's like, oh, well, all these people at the table are just so much smarter than me. They're narrowing down all the cards. Then maybe you might like this. If you like superheroes, you know, this is a nice little kind of thing to create your origin story. I think in all of this is that I did feel like I was still creating this character of abilities and things. And I like the events. I like the ending to be able to actually finally become your hero at the end. I think those are all really cool aspects of a game, but they overall like creating this massive story wasn't as much as I would hope for. You know, a game that does do that more recently was the Lord of the Rings, the trick-taking game. That does feel like a story. Like, you're actually trying to do something within the game. And so it has a better picture and storyline than something like this, even though I felt like I should be doing this. There should be making this story within this game, and it was not happening as much as I would have hoped.
I agree. I mean, I'm a big Stonemaier fan, and
yeah, you've never said anything bad about them. I was surprised.
It's just not for me, I guess. I really was excited about it, but I hadn't thought about that. But this theme should have been a co-op structure like the Lord of the Rings game.
Yeah,
you like build on it as you go. Man, that would have been so cool.
Yeah, you have this competitive aspect, and so, I mean, I get it.
But what do you do when you're, like, fighting against, like, the, I don't know, the theme, like, that's what I'm saying about the theme being on the back burner. Like, it's in front of you, but then it goes away for the trick-taking part.
Yeah, exactly. And like we kind of described, it's like, you're creating this character, and then you play a game of trick-taking, and then you go build your character.
Then you go back to your character.
And it's like, I don't know, what were we doing? Were we fighting off villains, but also each other?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, it should be the exact same game as the Lord of the Rings game, because, like, obviously there's several in that structure already, so I get it. But something where you start out with basically nothing and work your way up even with trick-taking involved. Like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I was excited, and then this one didn't hit it for me. So.
Kind of fell on its face. Hero fell down.
I do think it was easy to learn. I mean, it was pretty easy to get into. Rodney from Watch It Play did a great video for it. So if you want to try something and you don't mind the luck, then I'd say give it a go. But
yeah, I mean, I think it has aspects that are neat, and there's some cool design features here. Yeah, like you said, it didn't fall exactly where I would hope to have.
But I will say, just as we're kind of wrapping this one up, there were a few things that are cool. The decks are very thick. So like the replayability is high. You're going to see a lot of cool abilities and gadgets and that sort of thing. There are 5 different characters to choose from. So if you're not playing a 5-player game, you're going to get to kind of play through those in different aspects. There is a sidekick aspect if you're playing a 2-player game, to where you still see a good amount of cards like you would a 4-player game, and you have some control over what's coming out for, like, you will basically play the sidekick's hand. You have 2 cards to choose from at a time. You put one out and then keep playing as normal. And so it added a little bit of like, okay, how do I get the sidekick to help me out kind of thing.
which feels good. Yeah.
It was just, I mean, it was better than just like a bot, which is what I was afraid was going to happen at first. So I don't know, like the game is, it's like the concept is there, man. It's like it thought through some things, but I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. So.
Yeah, I think overall it fell short of expectation. And yeah, maybe that was, you know, they didn't want to dive into cooperative. They just want to stick to the PvP and have it that way. And so that just kind of limits you. And honestly, there's just a lot of trick taking games out there and you're comparing them to a lot of others, especially in the most recent years. I mean, the last 2 years has been crazy.
I think, I mean, especially with the way the economic market is right now, small card games are going to continue to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
I think publishers are going to really have to be on their game about how to make the theme tie into the game mechanics. I think that's going to be so crucial to making a game feel like it separates itself.
Yeah. And card games are a little, I mean, I'm not a game designer. And so I sit here and critique, but it is, you know, I just know when it is done well versus, you know, done poorly. And this isn't done poorly. It's just like, it's just missing. And but in a card game, you know, you just have cards. And so there's no pieces, there's no board, there's no the grandiose of design and you know, art and all the things of like a true, like large scale board game. So you have, it's just, it, like you're saying, you got to be on your game. You got to be able to, you know, put all the pieces together and make, tie the theme together very, very well. And I think this is just missing something here. All right. Well,
with that,
that was a mixed review.
Let's move into,
I made you a mixtape.
Oh, okay, great. It's funny because you said mixed and then we moved into mixtape.
Yep.
All right, great.
Ta-da!
Transitions! All right. I Made You a Mixtape is designed by Mike DeLizio and Dan Hughes. Artwork is created by Gary King and is published by Massive Asterisk.
I Made You a Mixtape is a 1-4 player, I Split, You Choose, set collection game about rewinding time back to simpler times, a tougher era, where you set out to make the greatest mixtape ever made, at least in your own mind, or my own mind. Maybe you're trying to impress your crush, or maybe you're crafting the ultimate rock road trip mixtape. To win, you'll need to build a perfectly balanced mixtape, both on sides that are close to length. The genres should have a nice mix. But most importantly, as we all know of any mixtape, the flow must be undeniable. In the end, the player with the raddest mixtape takes the crown and becomes, I don't know, the best mixtaper. Anyway, well, let's review. I Made You a Mixtape.
It was the best of times. It was the good old days.
Oh, man. I don't think any... There might be some people that have no idea what we're talking about. So,
well, that's so true.
Yeah.
For the children in the room.
I mean, I don't know exactly what we're talking about, but... No, I didn't sit there and, like, actually make... I was the CD era. I made mixed CDs a lot.
Made a mixtape, but in CD form is what you're
saying. Yeah.
Okay. I feel like that's close enough.
Yeah, I mean, the tape era was, like, when I was born, so I didn't really, like, have the opportunity to make a mixtape back
then. Have you ever operated a mixtape or a cassette tape?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I my car still has cassette. Yeah, I have a cassette tape of my dad playing drums on multiple albums. So yeah, no, I still use my cassette tape in my car. I love it.
Okay.
It's just, I do love music. I love, you know, I've got records and vinyls. I've got some cassette tapes and, you know, actually CDs is like the one thing I got rid of all of them. So, you know, I don't know. I guess that's coming back. I think that's getting cool again, you know, your Walkman or whatever. So,
yep.
I don't know. It is what it is. But anyway,
I had a Walkman.
Yeah.
I can claim that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Jared, if your life had a soundtrack.
Oh my gosh.
What would be the opening credit song?
This is one of those questions that, like, I think is an awesome question. and I can't answer it very well.
Okay.
I don't know, man.
He's struggling. He can't figure it out.
I've asked ChatGPT. I've Googled.
Hey, ChatGPT, what is my life song?
My life song.
I should do that right now. Oh, I'm really curious about what that would actually look like. But anyway, you should tell me what yours is.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I really leaned into, if you know me, my entire life has a consistent theme of persistence and never giving up. So a song that came to mind for me was Never Say Die by Neone. I love this song. It's fantastic. And I'll never say die, man. I'll continue fighting with you till the bitter end.
There you go. Well, mine, I think I have to twist it a little bit because it doesn't. But More Than a Feeling by Boston has everything that I want. Like if an opening song, or like if my life is a movie and you like the opening credit and the beginning of that song starts, it's just so like epic. And I love music. So sure. The song is, you know, it's about some past lover that we'll forget about that. The song is about music and the power of music. And so that would be what my opening credit would
sure.
be.
Sure. No, and I definitely like envision mine as we're going to do that thing where we're going to show you the beginning of the last 10 minutes of the movie before we go back into the rest of it. So
that's, I mean, it's good every time it's done. It's
true.
It's just, it's so good. So, all right. Well, I explain this game?
Can you?
I can do that. Well,
I'm prepared, man.
Yeah, I'm prepared somewhat.
Prepared. The slogan of this podcast.
That's right. We're prepared enough to do our jobs. Anyway, I Made You a Mixtape, like we said, is a I Split, You Choose set collection game. And so the cards that we're splitting are all different genres of music, and they have different actual song titles on those cards. The different genres are rock, alternative, R&B, hip-hop, rap, which are on the same, and then pop, and then punk. There's also a wild, I'll get to those. So on our turn, because this is kind of a simultaneous play, before we get started, we got to set, we got to get the record, we have to get it all ready, our recording,
and all the things set up. Get the record straight.
Yeah, get the record straight. So you have a little card that kind of shows the balance of your A side and B side. And then you kind of put this little dial up and it kind of gives you like this little, this little recording equipment. Basically, it kind of looks like that. So on your turn, you will take three cards. You will split them and pass them to the player to your left, I believe. Isn't that correct? So I take the three cards. Like I said, all these cards, one, have a genre on them, but they also have a value, which is the length of the song. So I'll take these, I kind of decide how I want to split them, and I pass them to my left. My player on my right is also doing this all simultaneous play. I will receive those cards, and everybody at the table will be choosing which of the two stacks, one stack has only one card in it, but you choose which one of those that you want. Do I want the one with two cards, or do I want the one with one card? So on and so on. Everybody does this. And once everybody agrees that we have selected, we pass them back. You keep the one that you kept, and then you pass the other, you know, non-choosing that you don't want. You want the junk. I don't want your junk, and I give it back to Jared. Now that everybody has done this, it's designated for specific sides of A or B. I will put that in any order of the other cards, and you'll be gaining these cards. You know, you're technically gaining more than two sets of cards because I'm getting the ones that I picked, but I'm also getting the ones that were rejected by my left player. So you get to decide how you want to put those in any order that you want. And so you put them either on the A or the B, depending on what is on those cards specifically. Now, you continue to do this until the deck runs out, and we'll add up the points at the end of that. But the most important thing is that there is a, what are you, it's a...
It's the ribbon.
It's the ribbon of the tape is down each card. And that's a little bit random based on each card. it's, you know, some of them start on the top left and they go down to the bottom. It's a very beautiful little art that kind of the ribbon goes through the card and swirls around. When you're placing these cards, it's really important to have the flow, which I mentioned before. When you're placing your cards, you have to align this flow. And if it doesn't align, it's okay, but it's not most optimal. It's not the best mixtape. And so you'll be aligning that flow perfectly with the different cards. And that's why the order in which you place cards is really important when you're, you know, selecting these cards. You can always view them and choose which flow is going to work better for your mixtape. Once everybody chooses and once the card runs out, you're going to add up the score. To add up the score, again, we mentioned that balance. So if your mixtape is really long on the A side and not balanced, you're going to lose points potentially. If it's somewhat down the middle, it's a little bit longer, you might get, you know, not the maximum points of 30, you might get 26, 23, depending on how lopsided your mixtape is. So you add up those points. Then you'll take the flow, like I mentioned. So all of those ribbons, you'll score 3 points for having a perfect flow, and then 1 point for having just an okay flow per card. You'll add those up. Then you get, the most important is the genres. So you're going to score based on how many cards of each genre that you have. You'll score each card individually or each genre individually based on how many cards you have. If you have a bunch of one type, you'll score a bunch of points in that one type, but then you won't score really anything for all of the other types. So a balanced tape is always nice, but you know, maybe you can do really well and get all the cards of the rock genre. Once you add all of these together, you add kind of both your A and B side for the different flows and all that. Whoever has the most points at the end of the game becomes the greatest mixtape artist, I think.
You think.
I don't know. I haven't done it.
Way to open that one.
I'm not the best at making a mixtape, Jared.
You don't have the flow.
I do. I like put all one band on there, you know?
Yeah. You're just creating a CD soundtrack.
I'm taking the greatest hits album of my favorite band.
Sure, I understand.
Is that still a mixtape? I think so. No.
It's not. The game has told you it's not.
All right, well, anyway.
This game knew in its soul how to win me over from the jump, because you each get a card that starts out your tape for you. Yeah, that gets flipped into your little section or whatever.
Yeah.
And the opening turn of game one, I got Rickrolled. And so I was like, yeah, this game just knows how to speak to me.
That's right. Yeah, the Rick. And they do have, yeah, so I did mention that Rickrolled. Like, it has real songs and genres on them. And that's always cool. And then I did mention the Wilds. The Wilds are strictly just for flow. I guess you could kind of make up whatever y'all this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, they don't
this,
count towards a genre bonus for score.
They don't. And they're also, there's cards in there that you can write your own songs on, but for the strict aspect of Wild, it doesn't have anything on it. So you kind of have to use your imagination of what song that is. I don't know. But it is cool, though. The Wilds are used strictly for flow. They don't really do anything else. And so they're not, they're only scored for flow. They're not scored for any of the other things. But yes, obviously all the songs, you know, when you're looking at your tape, it's really cool to look like, I'm all on A. I have an A side, you know, banger list, but my B side needs a little work. So that balance, but you know, in the I split, you choose scenarios are always interesting in that you start to realize, you know, what you're handing the other players, what you're getting back. And so you're kind of always analyzing, what am I giving them? What do I think they're going to pick? Because I want this back. I kind of like, you look at your three cards and you're like, well, I want these two, but what if I just get one of them? And that's kind of what's going through my head in a game like this. Okay. Like I would be okay with having one of these. And so I make it in a way that makes it really hard for you to pick to, you know, keep me out of the game basically. And so the same thing goes for you when you're handing me stuff, you know, you're kind of handing me things that you think, you know, okay, I think you might take this one. So I'm going to incentivize it a little bit so that I get what I want as well. And so you're always analyzing what the other players are doing at the table. And I do think it's really interesting is that you're, you know, passing your left. So in a higher player count, you know, I'm passing to you, let's say on my left, and there's somebody else on my right, you know, they're handing me something. I never hand them cards. You know, they're always handing me cards. So that's all I do is just pick. I don't really have any choice in what they hand me. And so I think it's actually one of my, a more favorite mechanic to me. It's simple and easy to do. like, you don't have to be good at the game to do it. You just pick cards and hand them back.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The eye split you choose, it's this like interesting negotiation, right? Like, I really want all three of these in some scenarios.
Yeah, I want all of
them. So I got to decide what you want. And how do I negotiate that you want this one more than you want these two?
Yeah.
Or I really want this one, so I'm going to give you these two and we're going to be okay. Like, we're cool. Yeah. Staying each other. So it's this silent negotiation that I find fascinating. And I'm usually not good at it in the general concept of I split, you choose. Cause I always like, I don't know. I'm not good at balancing. I get too excited. Yeah. I want all of this. And you can have nothing.
You can't have anything.
That's work. So.
You can't have anything nice. I want it all.
But, yeah. But no, this game really sings at four because you see all the songs and everyone's talking about the songs while you play. So you're always like, you've got your Spotify or YouTube music out or whatever, and you're playing your songs while you're playing them down.
Yeah.
We're hitting all kinds of bangers. That was fun.
Yeah.
You know, you're just... You don't get to see, I mean, you can see, but really the game is going fast enough that you can't keep up with where all the genres are.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to collect your stuff and the game has a good clip to it.
Yeah.
I think it's a fun little game, man. I really enjoyed it. And it's got a lot of different things to think about when you're putting this little puzzle together.
Yeah. This game, like, you know, we're talking through, like, there's like a lot of decision making. There's like, there's individual decision making, but like, this game's pretty quick. I think we knocked a game out in like 20 minutes, even with like four players. So I think overall, like, yeah, this game is quick, easy to play, but like fun and thematic. So we were just talking about how, you know, how do you make a game feel thematic when it's just cards? And this does. Like, I mean, I don't know. It's just a big difference between these two games that we're kind of talking about here on how the theme is really soaked in and baked into it. Of like, you know, you're making this tape and yeah, it's the songs, you know, the attention to detail here. I don't know. I guess you didn't have to do that, but they added song titles on there. And sure, I don't know. I'm really bad about song titles. I know like the lyric.
Yeah.
I recognize the instruments of songs more than I do names. I'm so bad about the names, but like I recognize some names in this game, like absolutely. And so I'm like, oh, like that's cool. And so like you're building this tape. And I think it's so cool that, you know, you have the different genres and you're building that set of genres.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, do I want to only stick with three different genres? Cause those are the genres I like, or these are the genres that I'm picking. Or do you want to kind of have this, defined balance like perfectly along with A and B side. And so, there's just a lot of decisions happening within the game that are so neat and do feel like you are making this tape of like this bounce, because that's what you would be deciding on, like how long do I want the side to be or whatever. And that flow aspect with the ribbons down the center, I think oftentimes it's really challenging to like achieve because you have to have this, you know, each side of the card match. But it is really quite rewarding when you have matched like most of your track. Dude, you get so many points from something like that. It's insane because it's 3 points. If you match both the top and the top and the bottom of the actual song, matching them together, you get 3 points. And if you only match one side, it's 1 point. And so you're losing out on multiple points. And you do that over the course of your entire side. And it can be a lot of points that you're losing out on. And I think it's really cool aspect of that whole like kind of drafting, you know, and choosing of how do I make this work in my, you know, I'm taking a pop because I'm collecting pop songs, but this doesn't flow. So I'm losing out on points, but I was like, you know, where's the compromise here? Constantly making those decisions. I think it's really cool. And again, this is all happening like within 20 minutes tops. So I think overall, go ahead.
No, I was just going to jump in and say, because I think you were going to say it a few minutes ago, that, you know, with the cards and the songs, you are almost creating a story like you would with a soundtrack or a mixtape. And it's so fun to see you like look back over the songs once you're done and you see where the flow is and where it kind of breaks apart. And you're like, yeah, that actually kind of makes sense when I'm listening to these songs one after the other. They don't have that flow versus the ones that do. It's kind of crazy, actually.
Yeah.
My brain could not do that. But I mean, kudos to both DeLizio and Dan Hughes, because like that's insanely hard to do, I think, to be able to come up with the right cards to flow in the right spots. And I do love that tension of do I focus on flow and go ahead and get what I know is points? Or do I focus on this genre that could get me more points if I get the right cards? And so I think that's really well done. This is also a small box, simple card game. And it's something that I felt like I was making a mixtape the entire time.
Yeah.
And for me, that theme is so important. Like, I will buy a game without knowing what the mechanics are if I like the idea of the theme.
Yeah.
I did that with Origin Story. Until it was on my front doorstep, I didn't know it was a trick-taking game. Like, that's just who I am as a consumer, because I want to experience the story of the theme that you're selling me.
Yeah.
And I trust that whatever mechanic you choose to go with, that's fine. But there is definitely a contrast. Like, I think I Made You a Mixtape did such a good job with the different mechanics that it chose to be able to feel like I'm actually making a mixtape.
So. Yeah, and I like the subtle thing, like, so, like, and it makes sense as a game mechanic, but, like, when you know, I hand you three cards, let's say you give me two back, you know, they're both on B side. Yeah. So I have to pick the order in which I want those two to go. As long as I pick it now when I get them, and then I put them down and it's permanent, which makes sense thematically, is that, you know, you're putting it on the track. It is now, you know, burned onto the track. And so you can't undo that. And so now you have to build out from there. You know, you're trying to make the flow based off what you've already put down. And so, yeah, you know, you're getting more as the game goes on. And so you're kind of creating this long, long track. But I think that's cool. It's like, you can't change anything you've done in the past, which makes sense as a game mechanic, but also thematically, it's like, no, you burned it. Like, it's done. Like, it is on the tape now. The tape has been taped. And so I think that's really neat. Like you're saying, like, we felt like you're making a mixtape the whole time, and it does. And it's a short game, you know, what, 2 to 4 player?
One,
you know,
I mean,
it's 1 to 4. Okay, you can do it with one. Nice. It's a great design. You know, if you like card games, you know, honestly, this works for a lot of different ages and families.
Yep.
I think this is just an easy, fun experience for any type of gamer, non-gamer, like even non-gamers that are just musician fans could easily figure this out. Like, this is a piece of cake. But also has a lot of depth. You know, I know, like, they might not get all the subtleties of the strategy here, but overall, like, you're just making a mixtape, but that's fun. Like, people love music, and be able to put your favorite songs on tapes. You know, you could go through and just pick your favorite songs. Like, somebody could easily have fun that way.
I mean, we played with multiple different groups, and every time it was, oh, I remember this song, and like some story that would come with it or whatever, you know?
So now you're having this nostalgic effect on top of the game.
Yep.
Hard to beat in that scenario. So if you like any kind of smaller card games, I'm trying to think of anything super similar. I mean, we've talked about trick-taking games. So, I mean, if you like absolutely love card games and trick-taking game style or whatever, like, this is definitely one to try in that regard. But overall, I just think it's a good experience here to just have fun at the table. It's a good fun experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only critique I could really give this game is if it's a 4-player game, I'm not experiencing anything with the person across the table from me. Like, the person on my right is determining the card or cards I get back.
Yeah, and the person on your left is the one you're handing them to, so. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what it is. So.
But everybody's interacting at the table.
Sure.
People at the table.
It's a small thing.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. That's the, you know, that's always a challenge in a game like this is, you're not necessarily interacting with that person. And that's, but that's what you're saying was like, oh, I remember that song. And so we kind of went around that first game, the first game we ever played, we kind of went around and said, hey, what did you put on your tape? And so everybody's kind of like sharing what they, even across the table, you're like, I'm not talking, I haven't seen these people's cards at all, but they're telling me what they put on the tape. And I think that's cool. And you can kind of see everybody's flow and all that. I think it's really neat. And yeah, it is a critique in a way. It's kind of just the downside of the overall game. But yeah, it's just the way it's structured. And I don't think it's anything to, unless you're just dying for some player interaction, then yeah, that.
I think it's fine. But
then I wouldn't be playing this one. Then I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. So no, it's great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I agree with you about the family weight. It is definitely a family weight for a lot of people.
Yeah. Excellent game.
All right. Ian, any final thoughts on our episode today?
You know, card games are still around. Everybody loves them. So there's more to play. And, you know, and I guess we talk about, you know, you kind of mentioned it, this world of, you know, it's either the economy, it's people on the go, on the move all the time. You know, good card games are needed, and there's a lot of them. And so, you know, I prefer more large scale board games personally over, like, you know, a bunch of light card games. But that's a personal thing. And I like to add card games to my collection to create balance. And, you know, that's what we learned today. Balance. Balance is key. Balance is key. So I think, you know, we always on this podcast try and find games that are fun and enjoyable to play. And I think I Made You a Mixtape is definitely in that category. Origin Story, I think, is very unique. I think there's some people that are going to like it. I didn't find it the most of enjoyable. I think it had fun aspects, but I think I Made You a Mixtape is definitely top tier.
For sure. And I think there will be people out there that like Origin Story.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big trick-taking fan in general. So I think overall, like, it's just didn't hit for me. And that's okay. I think the overall theme is a good idea and has good aspects of it. And it's a little twist on a trick-taking. And I think those are all good aspects. I think there's some really good design within the game. And so I'm not going to deny that. But yeah, out of these two, I definitely, you know, I Made You a Mixtape 10 out of 10 times.
Nice. Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on either of these games, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametailpodcast.com. Shoot us an email at thegametailpodcast@gmail.com. Or find us on BoardGameGeek. All those links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing in your podcast player of choice, liking the video if you're on YouTube, subscribing on YouTube, telling Ian he's great and that he's your hero, following us on socials if that's your thing. There's so many different ways that you can be helpful and do heroic actions, because we love you guys, and we're just trying to grow this little podcast. So, special thanks to Ashley McCaffrey for our cover art, to Anna Snyder, who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chislin for the How to Play background music. Easier for you to say. Join us next week as we over to do something else. I can't remember what we're doing next week because I still have the plague. That's just the way it is. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
And you create your own origin story. Become you.
Become you!
The origin story where you become you.
Wow.
In theaters tomorrow.
That was incredible.